Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim.
Hey, everybody. Happy Monday from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. I'm Molly.
And I am Kim.
And we just hope you had a great weekend. It's a beautiful day today.
Beautiful day.
Hopefully you're waking up to some good news out there. We are too. You know, we like to bring forward the important issues that should be on that busy person's radar and then dissect them as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And to help us do that, we like to bring in experts in different industries so that we can really break down and get to the truth, get to the brass tacks, if you will. We know what we think about it and our opinions, but we want to really find out what's the best for all Americans, not just one political party or group. And so that's what we do. And so today we're going to be talking with the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association's president, who is with us in studio right now, Tim Jackson. Welcome.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, thank you. You know, mobility is very important to all of us. We want to make sure that we have the options to do what's best for us and our families.
Mm-hmm.
And so before we get into that with Tim, Kim, let's talk a little bit about current events.
Oh, there's a lot of big day, Molly.
Big day.
Particularly at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has revived President Trump's travel ban. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear the Masterpiece Bakery case. And the Trinity Lutheran case, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Trinity Lutheran, which is a very big deal. And so those are the three things that are jumping out at me that the Supreme Court did today. There was one other one, I think, that you
said. There's one other one that jumped out to me, and all three that you just mentioned are positives. They are going to look into that, and that's good. But the one that Supreme Court actually rejected, the challenge they rejected today, unfortunately came at a challenge, and that's regarding the rights to carry guns outside of their homes. Sounds like in San Diego, the sheriffs there have been really strict on allowing people to carry. And they say they really want to make sure that people are proving that there's a good cause for them to have to carry. And, you know, the second offense is there for us to protect ourselves. And we are our own first right of self-defense.
Right.
So if I'm going to prove to you how much I need it, by the time I prove it to you, it's probably going to be
a little
too late.
A little late, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think it would be important for the Supreme Court to go back and actually look at all of our Constitution, because it seems like they haven't been paying enough attention to the Second Amendment.
Right.
They're doing a lot on the first, thank goodness. They're doing a lot on the fourth, but not on second. Yeah. So that's the big one on my case. But the other one, just real quick, to go back to the travel ban.
Okay.
You know, Rob Nadelson is going to be in studio with us tomorrow, and he is a constitutional expert. And many Supreme Court justices over history have looked at his writings and used them to come up with their opinions and to vote. And he's going to really come in and break this down for us. But as you know, I was concerned about the travel ban as it kept getting stopped by different courts, you know, Hawaii, mm-hmm. and California and what have
Ninth
you.
Circuit, yep.
And wondering why were they able to do that and why were they doing that? And I asked Rob Nadelson. Now, Rob, he was not a big Trump fan. So he comes honestly. But he says, you know, but legally, the president can put a halt on travel into our country from people from other countries if he thinks that there's some sort of a risk. And as we continue to look at the news and we see the mm-hmm. attacks in so many different countries in the West, and we continue to get threats here in the United States, I think it's really a wise idea to look at our vetting. You know, the six states, what it was seven broken states that President Trump originally put on that travel ban. Actually, he didn't come up with those states on his own. Those were President Obama and Secretary of State Clinton came up with those and said that we weren't able to get the right information from them. They were at-risk states. They're broken states. They don't have the information to send us. So I think it's really good that he kept pushing forward, and I think it's great that the Supreme Court justice on their last day in session before they go on break agreed to the travel ban, and they'll hear the oral arguments in October.
Right. President Trump was quoted today in an article, and he said his number one responsibility is to keep the American people safe. And it's great that he understands that. So this is a very exciting day for this. There is some questions about it. There's some things that could limit, you know, the particular Supreme Court case. But, Molly, I had three questions that I would like people just to think about. The first is, why are there groups out there who are opposing a travel pause or a thorough vetting? Secondly, I think it's important that people understand that there are entities out there that make a lot of money in resettling refugees, and they're using taxpayer money to do that. And then I wanted to ask you, are you surprised that this was a unanimous decision?
I am surprised. Well, it gives me much hope because, as Rob Nadelson said, you know, when he was shopping around at the different circuit courts, they were always trying to find somebody they knew, some judges they knew, who would disregard the Constitution, who would disregard law, and would vote based on their politics and on their personal opinion and just to hurt the administration rather than literally looking at the facts and seeing, is it legal or not? And so I'm glad that all the Supreme Court justices, although you've got some that are on the right, some are on the left, some are in between, they all agreed unanimously that the safety of American people is their job. It is the job of the government, and they are one branch of that government. And if nobody else is going to do it, thank goodness they're at least coming down on the right side. And they're not stopping it forever. They're saying these are six broken states.
Let's get our house in order on this.
Let's see what kind of information we have on the people so we're vetting who comes in here. We don't lock our doors because we hate the people outside. We lock our doors because we love the people on the inside. And keep in mind what SCOTUS said about this travel ban is they're going to allow them to enforce this ban. It's only there are still people can come in if they have a bona fide relationship with a person or an entity in the United States.
That's the one thing right there, entity. That's what I'm a little concerned about. I think that can open up a whole bunch of questions.
Sure, so and lawsuits.
So that's the one thing that I'm a little concerned about, Molly.
Yeah. Well, I get it. I'm glad that at least that they are allowing this to go ahead for the most part. But yeah, I think there are going to be a lot of lawsuits, and we're going to try to figure out what that means. But for now, let's protect the people. I mean, there are bad guys that want to come after us. They're not slowing down. They're not stopping. They're just getting ready to go.
Yep.
So let's protect the people. That's the right of the government. That's what we hire government to do. We're the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we just want to make sure that everybody has the right to go after their hopes and dreams. And in order to do that, we're shedding the light on what the politicians are doing and what the media is telling you in searching for truth. So stick with us, and we'll be right back.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment, and closing fees are limited. Active duty or retired military, reserves, and surviving spouses may qualify. Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook have spent decades finding the correct loan to suit your unique financial situation. Give Home Mortgage Alliance a call at 303-888-2732. That's 303-888-2732. Or check them out on our AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com.
Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516, or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you.
Today you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Eggs, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and I'm Kim.
I'm Molly.
And we have Tim Jackson, who is with CADA, the Colorado Auto Dealers Association. I have a hard time saying automobile and dealers right together. So Molly can do it. I can't do it, Tim.
Yeah. It's a mouthful.
You go home and watch 16 Candles as many times as I did in the 80s, and you'll be able to say automobile. dealers? With an accent.
Okay.
Automobile.
So, yeah. And we are so excited to have you here. There's one quick thing that I'd like to bring forward for our listeners before we get to our conversation. And that is, tomorrow there's going to be a really important vote out in Jefferson County with the Jefferson County Commissioners. And this is in regards to some HUD money, housing and urban development money, that comes down through the CDBG or the Community Development Block Grants. And embedded in that language, and this was something that I'd seen when I was on city council, is something called AFFH. You have to know your alphabet whenever you're talking about government. It's very important. And AFFH stands for Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing, which sounds very noble. But when you really look at what is occurring here, and Molly, you and I have talked about this over the years, so you have an understanding on this as well, that in reality, what AFFH does is five things, or six things, I guess I have here. It picks winners and losers. It decides which governmental entities and which nonprofits get money and which don't. It has limited accountability and transparency. In fact, one of our colleagues had asked for the financials on some of the entities that have gotten money in the past at Jefferson County, and that was not available. Third, it moves local zoning decisions and authority to federal agencies. Four, it can put communities at risk for being sued by outside entities with political agendas. Five, it facilitates social engineering of our neighborhoods. And lastly, this is really of concern, it ties the hands of our peace officers. Now, most of this language was written back in the previous administration. But what it says is that each jurisdiction of a county that takes this money, they need to have in place policies regarding how police officers work with civil unrest. Now, we see what's going on over here with all of these different protests and all, and the fact that some of the, like the Denver Republicans at the most recent Pride Fest parade were attacked and verbally attacked, and also they tried to take things off of their float before they were going in the parade. We realize that this kind of language would actually be very detrimental to people that are peaceably trying to get their message out. So those six things there would be reasons that I would encourage the Jefferson County Commissioners to say no to this money. So anyway, I think that's important. It's going to be at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Jefferson County Hearing Room at 100 Jefferson County Parkway in Golden.
Yep. And we'll be there and we'll see you there. And one thing is, you know, anytime this should be pretty easy just to remember. Anytime somebody offers you some money for free, there are going to be some strings attached, right? Look behind the curtain. What are the strings attached? You're going to give me all this money for free and then I get to do something better with my neighborhoods? Well, that sounds great. But if you are a government employee, if you're elected, you know, city council, county commission, and tomorrow it's the county commission that's listening to mm-hmm. this, put yourself in the spot and think about it. What strings are going to come with this money? We do not want social engineering of our neighborhoods. You know, people work really, really hard to earn enough income to live whatever they want to live. And at some stages in one's life, you want to go live in an apartment complex or a condo where there's all kinds of cool stuff around. You can walk everywhere. You can bike everywhere. You don't have to take a car. That's great. That's great for you. And there might be some point where you say, gosh, you know what? I'm ready to get married. I want to have some kids. I want to have a yard. I want to be able to kind of do those things. I'm okay with driving a little way, getting to and fro. And you want to go out and you choose the best neighborhood for you and your family. You can do that. It's an option. It's a choice. All should be available for all. And what this Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing does is it requires all of the counties that take that free money, not free money, to put together a list of demographic data. So it's basically racially profiling and putting together racial analysis of who lives in what neighborhoods. And then the government says, now we've got to mix that up. And they come in and they move around your neighborhoods. So Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing, AFFH.net. Check it out. There's more details there. We just want to make sure that you're in the know so you can protect you and your family.
Yes. Very well done, Molly. So, and you're talking about options, and that is a great segue to our guest, Tim Jackson, who is the president of the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association, CADA. I'm going to work on that, say that 50 times before you're back again, Tim. So welcome.
Glad to be here. Thanks so much, Molly and Kim.
We wanted to bring you in. I like my car. I like the freedom of my car. I have a small business, and I couldn't do my business in a train or on the back of a bike. I need a car. And I think mobility, the freedom of choices, the freedom of mobility, the freedom to drive is inherently something that's American. And you kind of know a lot about this. So we wanted to bring you in and talk. Let's start about driverless or autonomous cars. You probably know a lot about that, Tim.
Well, I'm studying on autonomous cars, working on a white paper right now on the positive impact of autonomy, as well as the implications from public policy or social engineering around those same vehicles. So let me say at the outset, because I don't want anybody to have any doubt on this, that new car dealers, I serve to all 260 of them in the state of Colorado, talk to new car dealers on a daily basis, sometimes two or three or four times in an hour. And I've never, in all my hundreds of conversations with new car dealers, ever had one say, "Oh, Tim, we need to find a way to stop autonomy." In fact, they're supportive of autonomous cars, as supportive of autonomous cars as anyone out there. As one new car dealer who happens to have a dealership in Golden and lives in Greenwood Village, and he says, "Tim, I can't wait for the autonomous cars to come out. I want to be able to have my car drive me to work." He says, "I've got about a 40-minute commute. I want to be able to talk on my phone, maybe text message, maybe watch a movie, maybe read a newspaper or a book, or even take a nap, and then get to work. It's going to be highly productive time." Nothing wrong with that. He looks forward to it. And oh, by the way, we should have all known that autonomy was coming. Every year there's new options on the cars, and a lot of it's standard equipment, like crash avoidance warnings, lane departure warnings. You've got apps now that can for some cars, that you can parallel park your car with an app. How cool is that?
That actually might be good for me. Yeah, I think I need that, Tim.
See, year in and year out, the cars become more autonomous, and now there's projections. And by the way, there's gazillions of dollars in the industry being spent. Don't ask me to define that anymore. It's billions upon billions upon billions of dollars being invested, both by the traditional auto manufacturers, in virtually all of them, as well as a lot of Silicon Valley investors, mm-hmm. or Silicon Valley infrastructure like Apple, Google, Microsoft, Intel, and others. And there's a huge race to be behind the technology that makes autonomous cars available. And by the way, when we talk about autonomous, there's a lot of different names for it, and they're all, as far as I'm concerned, all applicable. You could call them autonomous cars, self-driving cars, or driverless cars. But we're right now, we're in an evolutionary stage. And by evolutionary, I mean they gradually get more autonomous each year. There's projections now, a lot of people making claims that we will have, and I say we, the manufacturers of this technology, we will have autonomous cars in service in the next 2 years, or within the next 3 years, or by 2020, or by 2021. There's no doubt that the technology is coming. And as one of you said earlier, it was mentioned mobility. It's mobility. Think of it as mobility on demand. So everybody's familiar with the Uber model or the Lyft model. These are taxi-type services that you can call up on your mm-hmm. cell phone on an app. And, by the way, we use them at our office. We had a meeting anytime we're at the outskirts of the high-rise area, let's say in the shadows of the high-rises. But if we're going to the high-rise area downtown in Denver, we'll take an Uber or Lyft because it's better than a $6 Uber ride is better than a $20 parking spot, right? Mm-hmm. So we use them all the time. Okay, I've actually been surveying Uber and Lyft drivers and ask them, based on the number of miles you travel with passengers, how many additional miles do you drive between passengers? So the industry terminology is run empty miles. Okay.
And I just want to interject. We are talking with Tim Jackson, who is the head of CADA, the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association. And so go ahead, because that's a great question.
Sure. And the average, and I've literally interviewed over 200, about 238, I believe, at last count. And the average is about, they're driving an additional 40% more miles running, doing that run empty. Some of them are even one-to-one. For every mile they run with a passenger, they run empty to get to their next passenger. Well, why that number is important is as this technology evolves, the predictions are, and it's logical prediction, that those Ubers and Lyfts and other services, Mavens and others that are out there, will be driverless. So when you call up the Uber on your app, the car will come up, but you don't have to worry about smelling a driver, you know, or, okay, or listening to a driver complain about the roads or anything.
But who's going to keep those cars clean? You know,
that's a good question. It's going to be there's going to be a whole new area of service for those vehicles, and that's an excellent point, and I want to hit on that eventually.
When
we get to that. But let's say these cars will be running empty. Okay, so how many times, and Kim, you and I just got to the station here a while ago, and I was in pretty heavy traffic. I had to come from a meeting up around Stapleton. I was in heavier traffic than what I would have anticipated at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Who among your listeners have ever had the opportunity to be standalone in standstill traffic, not standalone, standstill traffic in rush hour on I-25 or I-70? Okay, we all have, right?
Right.
Standstill. Now, they say the concept on driverless cars is that they will platoon, okay? Do you know what platooning is?
No.
This is when one car will get much closer to the car, be able to get much closer to the car in front of it, and that one in front of the next one. So you'll pack more cars into the same amount of space. That's all well and good. But if the interstate is stopped, it just means that you have more cars on the interstate.
Oh, sure.
It doesn't mean that it's moving any faster. In fact, it'll actually be moving slower, right?
Wow.
Because they're all platooning. And that's a technology. And by the way, it's not just cars that are going autonomous. It's expected that the over-the-road trucks will. These are like the Freightliners and the Kenworths and the Mack trucks. So if you've ever been concerned about the Mack truck that comes up behind you and rides your bumper too much or too close behind you, that next time it might be a Mack truck that's driverless. So, by the way, as impressed as I am with driverless trucks, and that will, you know, expedite freight, presumably, down the highways even faster, I'll be extremely impressed when those trucks unload themselves and deliver themselves to the
delivery
point.
Yeah, or, you know, when they get out in the heavy snow up on I-70 in the mountains and put chains on their own tires and they get back in the car that they're not actually servicing and keep driving.
So, well, and does your computer ever go down? I mean, I'm a little...
Because my computer goes down a lot. My computer and my car went down leaving your house one night, stopped in the middle of the road, and I couldn't go anywhere. The computer goes down, the whole thing stops. Then the traffic is stopped all over town.
As we roll out of this, I know we're out of time, but now think of when you're out on the interstate and you look around, you're in standstill traffic, and you look around, you can rest assured everybody around you will be as upset as you are. But what if you look around and all the other cars are empty? So you don't have anybody in the cars around you. Now you're going to really be torqued.
It's almost as upset as looking at the light rail right now and seeing there's nobody in there. But we're paying for it. Stick with us.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, June 16th through the 22nd, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include Captain Underpants, Wonder Woman, and Alien Covenant. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. Please be sure to visit the delicious snack bar to help 88 Drive-In Theater continue to bring you the best in movie entertainment. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Stay up to date on movie showings and times at 88drivein.net. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Hey, if you are listening to the Americhicks live right now, it is 5:33 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and I hope you're not sitting in traffic. But if you are, it's a good thing you're on 1690 a.m. every Monday to Friday, because this is when we're digging into issues that really do matter to that regular person.
Us.
Not the politicians, not the faux media sources, not those that live in, you know, behind marble
glass
walls.
Houses, and elitists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the rest of us. Okay, so we have in studio with us Tim Jackson, who is the president of CADA, the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association.
Show off.
And, you know, and it's very important. What CADA does is they are really the voice for the automotive retail industry across Colorado, and they advocate on issues that are important to not only the auto industry, but also the driving public. And one thing that we care a lot about in Colorado right now, and we've talked a lot about it this year down at the state legislature, is our roads. We care about our roads. We want to make sure that the money that's coming out of our taxes is going to pay for the roads that we drive on, not for all this other stuff that apparently it's been bleeding out, and they've been ignoring that. So we're talking about different things that are coming up, Tim. So we were talking before break about that driverless car, the self-driving autonomous cars, and you were mentioning just before we went to break, and we talked a little bit over break. So real quick, one question. If the driverless car, it's kind of like an Uber that comes to pick me up and then goes to pick somebody else up and goes back and forth with nobody in there, Kim brought up the question of how do they keep that car clean? I want to go a step further. Do you have any idea what do they do if something really bad happens? Say it's 2 a.m. and somebody's had too much to drink and they have a little accident in the car. Is there a computer or a camera or something that's going to be watching to know, go clean that car before it goes to somebody else?
Well, that's an excellent question. I've wondered about that myself. As one person describing that problem to me said, say they take a teenager home and from the bar at 1:30 in the morning and the teenager gets sick on the way home. What happens next? There could be eventually, if you can do technology for everything else, you'll have sensometers, I assume, that would smell if there's something that's bad happened in the car. But I think for a while, as this technology rolls out, somebody's going to experience, we will all presumably experience, waiting on the autonomous Uber or Lyft, and there'll be dozens, presumably, other services like those, Maven and others that are out there. And we'll all experience the car pulls up, we're ready to get in, and we find that somebody had an accident in the car before the car got there. So then we'll send a message to the service, hey, this doesn't work here. Why? You know, somebody's had an accident. So it will be routed back to the center.
But you're still standing there waiting to go someplace.
But you'll be waiting on the next car.
Yeah.
And that wait is going to be two things. It might be shorter in the fact than what we're used to right now on an Uber or Lyft, because there will presumably be more of them. So instead of having one every 10 blocks now, there might be one every 2 blocks. So it'd be a shorter wait. But there's also, if everybody's using the service, what happens in rush hour? I mean, some say, well, you know, the problem with owned vehicles is that they're sitting idle or in a garage or in a parking spot 94 to 96% of the time. There's some truth to that. Now, I would be the first to agree that they sit idle a lot. As this dealer told me from Golden, he said, our cars are our sanctuary. We want it when we want it. We want it to be ready for us when we want it. And we want to have our stuff in it so that our stuff is still there when we want it and when we need it and when we go. Mm-hmm. And so this will be a whole customization, assuming that this model plays out. And I don't think some of us, maybe in my generation, will ever completely gravitate to it. We'll want to keep our own vehicles. And one thing I want to say is we want people to have the right to have the autonomous ride if they want the autonomous ride. And no problem with that. And we all have to recognize that mobility on demand and autonomous cars as it's being projected will be a really good thing for freedom for a blind person or for teenagers when a mother may not have time to take all three kids to soccer lessons, violin lessons in the public library. She can call up three autonomous Ubers and have one taking each kid each place and have them go back and get them. But suddenly, instead of two trips that she would make, one to drop them off and one to pick them up, suddenly we've put six vehicles on the road. So it's going to explode those VMTs.
Okay, now, Tim, I want to make a comment regarding moms. Now, I have three kids, and what you just described, it is a real balancing act to try to figure out how to get everybody where they are. But there was also something really rich about that. I had a friend that called the car the Tube of Truth, and the stuff that I found out about what was going on in my kid's life was pretty important. So if I'm not driving them around, as you mentioned, there's going to be six different trips, but I also don't have that time with my kids. And I know that that's just kind of a human interest component. But Tim Jackson, I kind of think that's important.
There are a number of social science developments that are in store for us, and that's just one of many. But I totally concur with you that will be an issue. Yes, that will be an issue. And we talked about the sales taxes on cars, and if we only need one, automakers only need to build one for every 10 they build now. That's a reduction of 90%. of
you know,
the
I think we talked about that during break. Why don't you break that down?
Let's talk about that here.
That's pretty important.
So 22% of the state and thus thereby local governments, that's cities, counties, states, and special districts, sales tax revenues are generated on the sale and or service of new and or used cars.
Okay.
That's a mouthful, so I'll say it in a little bit different way. More than one out of every five sales tax dollars and bordering on one out of every four sales tax dollars is generated from the auto industry for the sale and service of new and used cars.
Wow.
If the sale of cars, because we all go to a mobility on demand, one car replaces 10, suddenly there's a 90% decline. And how would the city of Lone Tree react to a 90% decline in the largest segment of their sales tax revenue? That's just the sales tax side. Then there's ownership tax.
And if, just a quick note, one thing Lone Tree did is they actually don't tax cars
for citizens.
So but that was something that was put in the charter. But that's an anomaly.
Yeah. And
Arapahoe County does.
But Arapahoe County would, or in, you're in Douglas County.
Douglas County would, yes.
Douglas County would. Mm-hmm. Just not the city, but the county
state
does. So it'll be hard on the city,
on the county.
And then there's an ownership tax, and state ownership tax anyway,
right,
that you pay at the time you get your license. And then there's the fuel, okay? Our entire infrastructure for whether it's autonomous or fully driven cars, the mother in the tuba van or tuba truth van, the roads are being paid for by the gas tax. Fueling that car, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Powering that
car. It's supposed to be a use tax, right?
Well, that's the actual fuel tax that you pay at the pump.
Right, but it's a tax that ideally people that are using fuel paying for.
Yes,
that. Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't have a problem with it from a standpoint. I mean, we obviously want to keep it as low as possible, but if you build highways, you have to have a way to pay for the highways, right?
Sure.
Right. And that's what has built the entire interstate system, as well as all highways, even whether they're in the interstate system or not. Federal highways, state highways, county roads, and city streets is all funded through gas tax.
Okay.
These autonomous shared vehicles are anticipated by a number of reports to be all electric. We don't have a problem with electric. Now, the technology, it's less than 1% of the overall fleet today is electric. One report I saw recently shows that by 2030, 95% of the total VMTs, this is a mouthful, so mm-hmm. get your head around this, 95%, so a vast majority, of the total VMTs in the United States.
Vehicle miles traveled.
Vehicle miles traveled, thank you. Using acronyms here, 95% of the total vehicle miles traveled will be in this combination, not one of these, but all three of these, autonomous, electric, shared vehicles. Autonomous, electric, and shared. Not autonomous, just autonomous electric, but autonomous electric shared. So if that's the case, if they're electric, electrics are not paying for any fuel tax. They're not putting any money back in to build the roads that they're traveling on. So the gas-powered cars and diesel-powered cars have paid for the highways, and the electric cars get to ride them for free.
It's not going to work.
Well, that's okay if it's 1% or less, because that's happening today.
Yeah.
But right now, because of federal and state incentives to sell electric cars, $7,500 on the federal level, $5,000 here on the state level in Colorado, I had lunch with a legislator today from Boulder County who said, well, we give a Boulder County subsidy for electric cars too. So government is paying consumers to take these electric cars off our lots, right? How pleasant is that? Okay. But we're not even paying the full price of the car. And then we're putting them on the streets that were paid for by gas and diesel powered cars, and we're not putting any money on that. That's not, you hear about sustainability.
That's not sustainable.
Wow. Nor is it fair.
Right. So this just has all kinds of questions. But what we see here is that government, this is not the free market working in this particular industry. This is government kind of manipulating things in social engineering. Tim Jackson, this is fascinating. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we have some more questions for you.
Okay.
In a world of
uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChick sent you.
Freedom begins in your house, not the White House. We Americans enjoy the privileges of a free society, and each of us has a duty and responsibility to keep America's unique ideals of freedom on course. How? Lens of Liberty can help. Lens of Liberty's Free Freedom Kit provides a complete guide to help you be informed, stay vigilant, and fight back for liberty. Order your free freedom kit from lensofliberty.org now. That's lensofliberty.org, so you are armed with the tools necessary to stand for America's ideals. Well, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We have Tim Jackson, who's the president of the Colorado Automobile Dealers Association, in studio with us. Tim, this is going way too quickly because there is so much information. In this last segment, you had just talked about the gas tax and the other taxes that we collect on our cars and our vehicles on the sale, or gas tax. This doesn't include gas taxes, right? The 22% does not include.
No, that's just the sales taxes. Sales and or use taxes by the city, county, and state level, as well as special districts.
Okay, so over here, there's this big collection, and that is 22% of the Colorado budget.
Colorado's total sales and use tax revenue.
Sales tax revenue.
Which is a big part, but not the total.
Not all of it, yeah. Right. Okay, thanks for clarifying. But then over here, we also have the gas tax. And one of the things, Molly, you know, that's troubled me significantly is that I think it was back in 2013, it was Senate Bill 48, where the legislature just very quietly put through something that allowed municipalities to take gas tax money and no longer dedicate it to roads and bridges. They could shave it off and put it into bike paths and walking paths and buy buses and all those things, you know, okay, you know, if the legislature wants to do that. But I think there was something inherently concerns me when people think that money is being collected for one thing and then it's being used for something different. And then now this year, we've got legislators and people out there, politicians, bureaucrats saying, we need money for roads and bridges. We need to raise the taxes. Now that torques me. I think you used the word torque. Yes. It kind of torques me. But
I think that's fair use of the word.
So we don't have a whole lot more time with you this afternoon, Tim. We'd like to have you back. These are important issues. What's the next thing that you would like our listeners to hear?
Well, I think let me leave you with some additional thoughts. Just we've played some scenarios there. All the empty cars around you when you're blocked in traffic, and that's where the word torque came up. We're all going to be torqued about that. As good as the technology is, and by the way, let me throw a few more acronyms out here, and I'll back these up. One of is just mobility on demand. I mean, that's the concept. MOD. I'd rather call it on demand mobility, ODM, but. Where you call up your car on the phone, okay, or your transportation on the phone. Another phrase on this is called TAS, T-A-A-S. It's capital T, lower A, capital S. That's transportation as a service. So transportation versus presumably owned vehicles, right? Transportation. I came out in a vehicle. It's parked in the parking lot. That was transportation. But if I called up a ride, a mobility on demand on my phone, an autonomous Uber, or what Bridges calls a robo-taxi, then it would be a transportation as a service. Okay? So those are some other, I guess, acronym jargon that mm-hmm. you should know about. Now, somebody talked, I think it was Molly, mentioned this technology. It doesn't always work real well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And technology is a great thing. We all use it. We're all used to cell phones. We've become very dependent upon cell phones.
And we are peeved when it doesn't work.
Yes, or if we even are away from it an hour, right? But it takes a while to get there, right? So I would just ask you, have you ever used a GPS and programmed in the destination that you plan to go to and let your GPS guide you there, only to find out that well, wait a minute, I know this is not the best way to go. It's taken me there, and it may get me there.
Right.
And sometimes it doesn't even get me there. And a case in point, I told you, well, we used an Uber to go downtown earlier today. We called an Uber up on our mobile device, and it gets the wrong. And we saw it go by on another street twice before it got to us. Well, the same technology that driver is using to get to us is the exact same technology that all of the automakers are using on mobility on demand or transportation as a service, driverless cars, to get you wherever you're going. So if it doesn't work with the driver, telling the driver where to steer the car to, it's not going to work very well for the car to get steered to you wherever it's supposed to be, right? Now, all that can be worked out over time, but it's going to be let's call it a phenomenon that's going to have to be fixed, right? And let me give you another thought on this, and that is that if autonomous cars will do anything, there's questions I've heard, I'm sure you've heard. Let's say an autonomous car is coming up, a school bus with kids is on the left, and a small child runs out with the ball
right,
on the right.
The ethical questions.
Well, we'll figure those out. They will figure those out. And I can't tell you if it's going to hit the bus and take a chance on the bus not hurting the kids inside or the kid on the side of the road. But it'll figure those out. But think about this. Think South Broadway in Denver, right? Six lanes of southbound traffic in rush hour. You might see the light cycle three times on your way before you get all the way through it, right?
Right.
Okay. Now think autonomous cars. Okay. If those autonomous cars will stop for every pedestrian, when will a pedestrian ever stop for a car? And if that's the case, it's mayhem.
Right.
In other words, if I know these are all autonomous cars coming down South Broadway, I don't have to wait on the walk light to turn white so I can cross, because every one of them is going to stop for me. I mean, the driven cars will try to stop for you, but you know the driverless cars are going to stop for you. So if everybody knows along South Broadway that every car is going to stop for them, when will they ever stop for a car? And it's going to be mayhem.
Wow.
We haven't seen traffic congestion and mayhem in that way.
Yeah.
And this has actually happened in Google cars being tested in Austin, Texas. Under the many tests that they are undergoing, they've had college kids jump in front of the cars at night, acting like they're kangaroos, you know, jumping in
front. Imagine
that. And of course, the car stops.
Sure.
But I saw a presentation by the guy that was heading the Google car project, the autonomous car project, and he says, I don't know what these kids were doing, but you can see the car stopped for him. You know, the car stopped for him. Well, sure it will.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't want it any other way. By the way, we're not advocating that the car hits the kids.
Okay? Right.
I don't know. I'm saying no consequences, no responsibility.
Yeah. So
there's got to be consequences
to choices
in life.
We want to take just a quick call here.
Sure.
Susan Kochevar is on the line. She is an entrepreneur, and she likes cars because she has a drive-in. And she has the 88 drive-in. And Susan, what's going on out there? It's going to be a beautiful week, huh?
Hey, Susan Kochevar.
Okay, there she is. Hey, Susan, what's going on out at 88 Drive-In?
Well, just a lot of stuff. We have a great program this week. We have Captain Underpants, Wonder Woman, and Alien Covenant. Yeah, all week. We have a great program starting on Friday, too.
Well, and
what's your lineup starting on Friday?
On Friday, we have Despicable Me, The Mummy, and Wonder Woman.
Okay.
All right. And tell us the special deals for everybody that wants to go to 88 Drive-In, because you are the historical 88 Drive-In, and everybody. I was at a car show this weekend, and everybody had out their 50s and 60s and all the really cool classic cars. And they're like, wow, those would be really cool to go to a drive-in movie theater if only one existed. I said, it did. You got to check out 88 Drive-In. Susan Kochevar has it. So just tell us the special deals.
Well, you know, our admission's pretty reasonable. $8 per person, and children under 12 are free. And for that $8, you get all three movies. You can come in and watch one, two, or three, and just leave when you want. You can come in and watch the second one if you want to. A lot of people don't know that. And we also run a pizza special during the week. So the pizzas are 12 inches, 8 slices, and you can have any topping you want. It's all the same price. And you get 2 16-ounce sodas, and that's $12.02.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Susan. Everybody check out 88drivein.com. She's a dear, dear friend. She's doing a great job at that drive-in movie theater, and it's perfect weather right now. So get on out there and do some fun with the family. Thanks,
that's
Susan.
For sure. So, and Tim Jackson is in studio with us. It's gone way too quickly. We only have just a few minutes. So, Tim, What are your last thoughts that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, I would anticipate there's going to be a lot of social engineering around the whole concept.
I don't really like social engineering.
Yeah, I know. And it's just going to be inevitable, and it's going to be painful, I think, for many. So already the cities in certain metropolitan areas are relaxing the number of parking spots that you have to have to build a...
Relaxing is a kind word. Limiting.
Yeah, limiting the number of parking spots. So City of Denver approved a facility, a brand new micro apartment unit where all the apartments are like 350 square feet. 114 units and no parking spots, zero parking.
Not even for the manager. It's not painful enough right now to park downtown.
Yeah, and so not even for the manager, okay?
Wow.
So these cars will have to have a place to park, and just like rush hour now,
where
all the cars empty out of garages and parking spots to hit rush hour, so will the autonomous cars. They'll have to have a place to go when it's not rush hour, and it can't be, you know, Dakota or, you know, Strasburg or somewhere 30 or 40 miles out because they're electric.
Because then it'll no longer be mobility on demand.
Yeah. Yeah,
right?
Because they're going to be too far away.
Exactly. Wow. Tim Jackson, this is so fascinating. And we recently heard you speak, and Molly and I are like, we have to get him on. And we'd like to continue this conversation because I know that this is going to be very important to kind of the freedom to drive, the freedom of mobility for our citizens. And that's been something that's been so uniquely American. And so let's stay in contact on all this.
Well, we plan to. Thanks so much for the opportunity, and there will be a lot more new developments. So think of me whenever you hear the strained comments about autonomous cars and some of the social engineering that will follow. Well, and we'll be happy to talk about it when it happens.
Well, that we'll do that. And I assume people can get some information from your website, right?
Yeah, we don't have a lot there, but actually we're gearing up for a new website just around the autonomous cars.
Okay.
And that's probably not more than 2 or 3 months away.
Okay, great.
We want to do it right, and it'll be around that freedom to drive concept.
Okay, well, fantastic.
I'd say nothing kills a good job market like the government forcing social engineering.
Yeah, we're not social engineering fans.
Well, I'm just thinking about the jobs. I'm thinking about the jobs. You know, look at McDonald's and Wendy's with the whole big push and force for higher minimum wages being paid by small business owners who have a very small profit margin who can't afford to pay their people more. So they've got to figure out a way to do more with less. So they lay people off and they bring in kiosks. So now you're getting rid of that human touch, that customer service. You're getting rid of all that. And when you're going to have an autonomous car, you don't even have an option for a driver and you can't drive your own. That sounds scary to me. That
sounds scary to me,
that's
too.
Like turning us all into robots. And I don't like that. I want to be able to have the one-on-one. I like, Kim, that you had your kids all in the car together and you're dropping them off at all the different schools and the different sports and grocery shopping and doing your laundry and taking the dogs and going skiing and what have you. And I like options. I like choice. That's the American way. I'm glad we're having the conversation. We want to continue to learn more about it. But we're also going to continue to really walk it down long-term and let people know what this might be for their future. So thanks, Tim, again for being here.
Thanks,
Tim Jackson. Thank you so much. And our quote today is from a guy who didn't take any government subsidies and didn't use government for social engineering, Henry Ford.
Love that guy.
He said, "I will build a motor car for the great multitude, constructed of the best materials by the best men to be hired after the simplest designs that modern engineering can devise. So low in price that no man making a good salary will be unable to own one, and enjoy with his family the blessing of hours of pleasure in God's great open spaces." Now, I asked Tim Jackson, we were coming up in the elevator, I said, did Henry Ford have government subsidies to create this business? And what was your answer?
No, I don't believe they even knew about government subsidies at the time he started. And then Ford was one of the few companies that didn't take loans during the economic downturn, the bridge loans, and didn't need to. And that was... all visionary on Alan Mulally's part, but it worked out well.
Yeah. Well, I remember my grandfather talking about that first Model T that they got. It was pretty amazing. So
You could get it in any color as you wanted, as long as it was black.
That's exactly.
Hey, I'm a Ford lover. I always have been. And, you know, even Thomas Edison said to Henry Ford, a car with its own power source? What an excellent idea. This is the AmeriChicks signing off.
AM